Okay, so like just for you both, you may know this, but like I read this chapter almost 2 weeks ago at this point, so I'm a little rusty on it.
Same. I read this like 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so Adam, you read this yesterday, right?
I read this today.
Even less
Heinous excuse.
Well, no, I mean,
wasn't even an excuse. It's just a straightforward statement.
Hey, I was told I had to have it read by Wednesday. So,
Your Honor, is Wednesday.
If you read the fine text, I have a friend in law school. You'll regret this.
What a threat!
Me pulls up an email, just blocked.
Yeah.
All right, no, yeah, I definitely will appreciate like a little bit of like a proper rundown in some of these sections and going back through some of the text. It has been a while.
Yeah,
but it was a pretty good chapter, I thought.
I really liked it.
Pretty dense.
Yeah, definitely.
I know this is stuff that you've been like interested in for a bit, Jordan, especially whenever we were discussing, like honestly, as far back as like Strawson, I think, like where like the intimate realm kind of peeks its head in. So this is a pretty hefty, you know, chapter on just this.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Definitely major overlap with the objective attitude near the end.
I put Jordan's initial somewhere. I'm like, I gotta ask him about this part. Like,
oh shit. Yeah. Okay, I'm curious to hear what that part is. But I guess, well, maybe we should say, for the people who are following along in the series, we skipped ahead a chapter. We're doing chapter 4 of the Nussbaum book, Anger and Forgiveness on Intimate Relationships. Okay, basically, the way that I read this chapter, and tell me if you guys agree, was like, basically, if you recall from like last episode, chapter 2 was where she laid out like the very broad scope of, not broad, but like the main scope of her thesis here, which is like anger as defined as including that like retributive wish for payback is like irrational on the one hand or ethically untenable on the other hand. And so basically she's arguing that all anger, save for that type of anger that she calls transition anger, should be just, you know, just eliminated from our lives. I took this chapter, and she actually does this, she does this in chapter 6 as well, where she basically just like takes her arguments and then applies them to different domains. So this chapter is essentially her just applying her earlier arguments in the domain of like intimate relationships. And then the fifth chapter is her applying it in sort of like the context of relationships that are not intimate, just sort of like day-to-day interactions, which she calls the middle realm. And then chapter 6 is she's applying it in the political justice context. Okay, first impressions, what'd you guys think of this chapter? I liked it a lot.
I love this chapter.
Okay,
yeah, it was good. Excellent.
Yeah. Good. Okay, I mean, within the chapter, and honestly within anything like relating this, we could just we don't have to, there's no systematic order to like any of this, but I okay let's take okay okay this would be fun. Okay, so let's take like a temperature read of everyone here, because we've been kind of doing that a little bit like throughout the series. I on a scale of 1 to 10, how convinced are you of Nussbaum's thesis?
Probably like a 9.
I'm right around there too. I'm very convinced.
I felt like this chapter was more so, like you said, just like how would this look in all different types of intimate relationships, you know, of all different kinds. And I couldn't disagree with anything really. I mean, no. I think there were points I wanted to think about further, especially with kind of like self-directed anger. And not so much like the logic behind it, but maybe more so like the efficacy of it. But otherwise, I kind of already bought the thesis throughout the chapter. So by the time I got to that point, I was like, yeah, I think there are more effective, or not effective, but more directed emotions, or just pure reason that could, you know, better attenuate behavior. You know, what I don't know, but that was kind of my overall view of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm pretty much with you. Giffen, we didn't hear your temperature reading.
Yeah, the same, you know, a 9. Like, there are some things in here where it's worth, like, you know, kind of contemplating. But overall, it's hard to find a place where she's, like, just kind of, like, off. Except for one part where she describes a previous view of hers, and then she critiques it. So, I mean, it was pretty excellent. So I'm going to have a 9.
You know what's interesting is, so we're out of order in the sense that we have been doing like the readings before class, but this one's obviously since we delayed after the class. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that I would say the majority of the people in the seminar have been largely arguing against Nussbaum.
Really?
Yeah, which is interesting.
I need to hear some of these like comments. That's amazing.
Yeah, the majority of the objections all seem to center around the idea that there's something sort of deeply appropriate, ethically speaking, about reacting to injustice with anger. There would be
even like, in the intimate realm.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I think
but did you use the word appropriate?
Yes.
But she says anger can be well grounded.
Yeah, like, and that's yes.
Like the feeling itself can be well grounded. I mean, she acknowledges that all throughout the chapter. It's more so. Do you stew in it? Like, do you, you know,
indulge it? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I, yeah, so yeah. It, that's a different question.
Yeah. So I guess for some of the people who are providing comments in your class, it's like the fact that it's well grounded kind of is like, you know, anything beyond that is a thought too far, maybe, where like that makes it like, you know, it's not just, not only is it like well grounded, but it's also like, you know, ethically sound.
Yeah. So I used the word appropriate with like a it was laden with more meaning than like what I should have said. Appropriate in the sense that like it is not only well grounded but sort of justified above and beyond that.
How?
Yeah. So
what was some of the logic there?
Yeah. So. And it's not, I mean, these aren't like fully developed arguments. These are just like thoughts that like people are having, but there's a, and like, I feel like I largely get the pull, but honestly, I feel it's hard to escape like Nussbaum's arguments here.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Part of, one argument that has been raised, and obviously I'm not going to be able to do as good a job because they're not like my own arguments. So,
yeah.
One argument was that anger is there's a question of what's the value of anger? Can we locate the value of anger in only instrumental places, which Nussbaum explicitly admits that we can, and I think all three of us agree that like anger can be instrumentally valuable. There's another question of, can anger bring along with it intrinsic value? And some people have expressed the view that this is sort of a very retributivist expression that, you know, like anger and the desire for payback actually has intrinsic value insofar as it sort of does one of several things. It could be like an indication of like there was one argument that it was the result of like what a well-functioning agent would experience given certain things. So like if you didn't experience anger at certain instances of injustice, there would be something sort of intrinsically wrong with that reaction. I don't think I'm like pulled by that in the sense that, I don't know, like even granting that argument, you could still... There's a difference between experiencing anger and expressing it.
Can you immediately move to the transition in a productive way? Because it sounded like they kind of agreed. It's like, well, it can be like useful, but like, is there an alternative perspective you can take just as like well-grounded that's more appropriate? It doesn't have like the drawbacks of anger.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that anger, like what, you know, Nussbaum argues inherently has. Because honestly, whenever like, again, these are just like, you know, questions that were brought up, I'm sure in good faith, like in your class.
The
idea of like kind of taking the position of like it would be kind of weird to not do it feels kind of like something that's like it reminds me of Twitter in a way. It's gonna might be a little bit weird, but it's like kind of like you're expecting the outrage, right?
Mm.
That makes sense. Like it's kind of rewarded.
And I know I said this, but let me just reiterate the point that I'm trying to recapitulate arguments that happened 2 weeks ago from other minds. Yeah. So I'm like, so okay, what I'm offering you basically just like double the force of like the argument. You know what I mean?
I'm not gonna straw man this. I'm just saying like kind of like let's call it a reaction. Maybe they're not even like fully, you know, developed arguments at all. It's just kind of like, you know, developing thoughts. That's what it kind of reminds me of. Yeah, I don't want to dismiss any of your classmates, you know, integrity or anything. I think it's
they just really, joined the Zoom call.
is this either kind of like adjacent to or kind of, I guess, like subsumed by the concept of just like expressing kind of humanity in a sense where it's like it's
dignity too. Yeah.
It's an all too human experience.
He mentions dignity. Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. I just...
There was like, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, you go.
I was just going to say, I mean, like, I don't think anyone would deny that it's of course, no one would deny that it's purely natural to, like, you know, experience anger in like the face of injustice. It's just like, it's a question of whether, and I think like Nussbaum does a pretty good job, but of just kind of exploring this point. But like, when she brings up the fact that other emotions can serve equally as well.
Yes.
Like it's only too true. It's not that people necessarily shouldn't feel anger, because people do. And if you're going to feel anger, you know, preferably let it be transition anger where it's forward looking.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there are other things that can, you know, provide motivation or can express solidarity or could be all too human, you know, in expression. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. Once you kind of like consider, it's like, yes, there could be some value in anger, but like you can just replace that with something that, you know, has the utility, but doesn't have the drawback. Right. It's like, and if that's always like a live option, then like anger loses its, you know, its real potency.
So, okay, I'm just making sure that I'm understanding both of you correctly, because it seems like both of you are saying that there is no intrinsic value in anger. So the value has to be located in instrumental sort of profits from anger, and just buying Nussbaum's argument, anger doesn't produce those instrumental aims. It certainly doesn't produce them exclusively, and it doesn't even produce them in the best way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say that, like, definitely no intrinsic value in the sense that I think much of the time, just from, like, you know, either considering the arguments she's put on the page or just from directly reading her, like, anger can lead to, like, destructive or productive consequences, and much of the time, like, it's pretty erratic. Like, it's
hard to direct.
There's, like, a very capricious nature to anger, where it's... Sometimes it's like led me to, you know, a better outcome, and sometimes it's like led to my downfall.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. Anger is the lion is the quote from earlier.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, what kind of intrinsic value is there? Something, you know, as capricious as anger that can lead to both, like, you know, your downfall or potentially your success? I don't know. Ooh.
So here's an argument that seems to me to be one of the best ones for anger. Okay, so, and this is an amalgamation, I think, of like what a couple people said. Okay, so we already like discussed how natural, you know, like how natural it is to feel anger. Like, given, this is like a Straussonian point, you know, he talks about like the reactive attitudes being like so deeply ingrained as they constitute part of our nature, you know. So, okay, given that point, think about someone like super close to you. Like, if any of us like on this call like deeply betrayed another, you know, the idea is that, okay, if you don't feel like true anger, then that is indicative of something like something cancerous about the relationship in the first place. So like the idea would be that like For a relationship to truly be sort of like meaningful and deep, it would have to be the case that sort of a betrayal by that person would induce full-blooded anger, not just this like transition anger.
And from like a third party's perspective, like seeing that someone doesn't react with like the full blown anger, that's a tell. That's like, you know, the behavior itself or the lack of like kind of a certain expression of anger is problematic.
True.
And what if it led to full, you know, full blown grief, as Nussbaum would say, though? I mean, is that also indicative of,
so, you know, straight to grief, you mean?
Straight to grief, where, like, you know, to you know, be deeply just injured on, you know, I don't think that necessarily shows like something cancerous or something wrong with the relationship to begin with, especially if there's been like a shift in mindset from reading a book like this, you know. If I had not read this book, I'm sure anger is the first thing I would, you know, I would go to. But it's like, after reading this, it's like, this really has made me question, like, you know, the practice of anger. And I'm like, okay, yeah, why couldn't grief suffice? In betrayal.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, because I think it's easy to, like, if in this discussion is like lack of anger, is like, that's not lack of everything, right? Like, if there is a grand betrayal and you kind of just like, oh, like that's concerning.
Yeah, but curious.
Like a peppermint on the ground. It's like you know, completely like nonsensical reaction. Yeah,
a knife,
like,
in your ribs.
If it's no anger or only transition anger, but like, you know, deep grief, like, I think there, like, you can say, like, okay, there's nothing really talked about the relationship or anything like that, or like, you know, lacking. That's like, you know, deeply human and appropriate and not lacking humanity.
So I think what you're pointing to, Adam, is like, okay, there's this, and this isn't like, I don't think we've talked about this explicitly, but I think all of us have like sort of like just obliquely seen it working. Like, okay, here's the weird thing about transition anger, not wrong, but just weird, is that it seems strange that one could suffer a deep betrayal like this and be able to both feel the full extent of like that betrayal, like, you know, the full extent that would be accompanied by like a close friend betraying you or something.
Yeah.
And also at the same time, be able to actually direct that into transition anger. And that's the weird thing about transition anger that seems to lend force to the argument that I just put forth, which is like, okay, well, maybe this is cause to view like full-blown anger in a more positive light, even if like the effects of it aren't positive. But then Adam's suggestion was, well, you're right, there's something weird about not sort of like being overwhelmed with an emotion, but why does it have to be anger? At least this is kind of like what I'm taking you to be arguing, Adam. Like, why couldn't it be this like being overwhelmed, but just by grief?
Yeah.
Because just kind of, you know, harkening back to chapter two a little bit, I mean, that could have been chapter one, but either way, whenever Nussbaum like kind of lays out, you know, recall that she put forward a few scenarios where she kept adding elements to the scenario, and she kept asking us like the refrain, you know, do we see this as anger? And recall, I think we were all on the same page that none of those scenarios struck us as anger until there was the concept of like wanting to cause pain or some sort of injury to you. And it's like, okay, so if that is what anger is, where it's the desire for, you know, another person to suffer
in small part, even just like unbreakable part of it.
Yeah. It could be, you know, as subtle as one could imagine, or it could be even subconscious. I don't really care exactly which, you know, like what are the bounds of that. But the point is if it contains that element, after like the few chapters we've read, I'm kind of like, yeah, do you need to feel that? is there any justification other than like, it's natural to feel that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah, and I think it's completely understandable, like, you know, for someone not having read that, because like that's probably how they react. So when they see it like not in someone else, you know, it's like, you know, do you not feel this is important because you're not reacting like I am reacting? It's just kind of like, you know, less introspective, or they haven't been exposed to the like, you know, idea. So it's like kind of that thing. It's like, no, I think if I'm seeing someone who's like really struggling with like a grief, it's like, okay, they didn't like devalue that relationship.
No, it's true. Like, what
it's if just they're lacking anger specifically.
It's true. It's true. I'm just thinking, like, okay, what if you could just like sort of build a switch into your mind right now that every instance of like full-blooded anger would just be redirected to full-blooded grief? Like, would there be any loss in like this, like the, like how much you value your relationships? Like, it doesn't seem to me like you would.
A little the transition box almost, you know, it doesn't even need to be like replaced with grief, just like immediate transition, right? That or one, that different
that,
view
that that one I'm a little bit more so okay. Transition anger, you mean?
Yeah
So okay, that okay, let me consider this. Okay so if someone, because okay, the thing about transition anger is, remember, like, okay, Nussbaum phrases it as like the following sentiment: how outrageous, what can be done about this, or so, it's something really close to that.
There
must be something that can be done about this, whatever, something like that, right? Okay, this is going back to like the talk about Strawson and like the reactive attitudes and stuff, right?
Yeah.
This is where, okay, here's the thing, is like Adam's suggestion, at least like insofar as I understood it, I liked, because to me, there's something weird in transition anger. There's like this weird third personal nature to it at its core. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yes,
it's like how outrageous, something must be done about it. And it's like, well, yeah, but there's a part of me that feels also sort of like, if all of my anger was replaced wholly by transition anger, I mean, again, I don't have like some deep like philosophical argument for this, but it's just like, I don't know, like you just fuck me over somehow, Giffen. Like you sabotage my PhD applications in some way, right? And there's nothing there. There's immediately like transition anger. That's a little odd at the very least. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I think the way that like she describes it, like the, you know, the how outrageous, what can be done, that does seem a little kind of like neutered as like a reaction. So I wonder if there's kind of like an expression of like actual transition anger that might be like a little bit more appropriate for like something of that magnitude. It's kind of hard because it's like outrage and like forward thinkingness, or like the two. But it's hard because
it would be a combination
formally, right? It's like how outrageous, what can be done.
I
do get your intuition there, though, like the difference between that and like grief. Like,
well, that's why I liked Adam's suggestion, because like being, so there's nothing intrinsic about anger actually, but it's being overwhelmed by a negative emotion that is like fitting to like what happened. And
the reason I suggested that is I don't know that grief would be an appropriate replacement for like all anger situations. Like, you can maybe imagine something where it's like you would be angry, but like playing with grief would be like a little bit like made up. Inappropriate or like odd, maybe, like,
yeah,
I'm trying to think. I got kind of was struck by that intuition at least, but you know, the difference between those two, you know, switches in the head.
but I think the way I see it, like, just to kind of comment like on like that short conversation real fast, like, I don't see transition anger precluding other emotions. Like, you could have transition anger like in conjunction with like deep grief and hurt, you know, whatever terms you want to use. I mean, but I see transition anger is more so like, okay, you know, as we are these biological creatures that are prone to anger, like, okay, given that, okay, are we gonna, you know, continue to adopt much of the classic anger mindset, or once you do experience that, like, should you work to transition that mindset while at the same time like still feeling hurt and grief? And I think I buy that. I definitely buy that it's like, as you are going to feel, you know, feel anger, you know, dwelling on like the potential pain or suffering another could experience, like, I'm not sure what that does, except for like, you know, that animalistic side of the brain a little bit.
Indulging. Yeah.
Yeah, but it certainly leads to like, you know, potential harm for you and the other. So
It does. It does. Okay, here's this other it's very closely related to like what we've been talking about, but something that I was like very drawn to at first, And then I thought about it a little bit more, like at the end of class, and at least a potential like paper idea for me, is on the, so people were raising this point about the communicative value of anger. So
yeah,
there's something weird going on with transition anger, where because like Giffen, you pointed out, it's so forward looking, right? How outrageous. So it's a recognition of the wrong, which is backwards looking, but then the forward looking part is what can be done about this, right?
Right.
And you know, that what can be done about this adheres to a very, very broadly consequentialist basis. You know, she herself says, like, I've written about this elsewhere. I'm not talking about like narrow utility maximization. There's a plurality of values, but it's like broadly right. consequentialist, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, but still, so here's the weird thing about transition anger. When you were like seriously wronged or betrayed or whatever, a very natural reaction is to communicate that hurt, you know, that harm. It could yes. be an expression of grief as well, right? But the problem, at least this was like, this was raised, the problem with transition anger is, well, whether you sort of like get to express that, is all hinging on the forward-looking aspect. So if it wouldn't be helpful to express that anger, then you shouldn't do it. And that seems like a very inhuman basis to communicate when you've been hurt, when you've been wronged. This is like basically the objective attitude discussion, but it seems weird that your communication in an intimate relationship would be like moderated to that degree by like this forward looking, this forward looking calculus. Do you feel the pull of that at all?
I'm guessing a little bit less than you do for myself. Or at least I'm curious about Adam's.
Yeah. I actually don't feel that pull as much for anger specifically.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I mean, like, I think anger could, you know, almost like faux anger could play a good role in, like, you know, kind of laughing about something.
Playfulness.
Or, yeah, exactly.
She mentioned that a lot.
Yeah. Oftentimes, yeah.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but which can play a good role but to kind of spread almost like a virus, like true hatred, you know, that you feel towards somebody else, and then somebody else kind of like adopts that desire for, you know, to inflict real harm on someone else. I'm actually not sure that does good for the world, actually.
Well, it certainly doesn't do good for the world, but the point that was raised was, well, doesn't it seem weird to sort of allow yourself to experience and express things on that basis? You know what I mean?
I think it's a fair intuition at first, like I described earlier. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, but once you kind of read this paper, I think it's like very clear. And this was like an intuition I had, much less formalized, kind of before even.
Yeah, yeah,
kind of
yeah.
Like objective
yeah.
attitude stuff. But like, I don't think it is like, I don't think it's that weird once you kind of like recognize, like, you know, the nature of anger, I guess. And you think about like what it really is. There are plenty of things that can, you know, behaviors, like deep, like genuine emotions that you can feel. That should express what anger can also be a signifier for, but like it is not a sole signifier for. It is not. There's nothing that anger can do that nothing else can do, in a positive sense, maybe.
Yeah, and also just to be clear, like for anyone who's familiar with like Strawson's objective attitude, this is also like I take it that while it parallels sort of that conversation directly, it can. You can conclude a lot of different things, you know? So for instance, just because you conclude that like transition anger is always what you should default to doesn't actually imply the objective attitude. That seems pretty clear to me.
It might in that emotion.
In the dimension of that specific emotion.
I think it kind of does imply that. Like if you buy the argument that transition anger is the, you know, the right mindset to kind of like adopt.
Yes.
I think it does apply the objective attitude for them.
So it may not, it may not actually, it may entail a pre-commitment to experiencing a certain range or modification of reactive attitudes, but it wouldn't require the adoption of a view of another as like something to be managed. Remember, like the objectification aspect. Because think about it, if you pre-committed to being like, so okay, this is like us right now, essentially, right? If you like read this book and you're actually like deeply, deeply convinced, like I never want to allow myself to feel anger, that wouldn't have necessarily anything to do with objectifying the other person. It would be just sort of a, because it wouldn't be required, right? Like,
are you sure? Because like think about like the transition anger, kind of like just the verbiage in it, like mm-hmm. this outrageous, something must be done. What does that entail? Almost as though there's like there are entities or people that must be handled, but not in that, you know, kind of interpersonal sense, more so just
yeah like, it could include the interpersonal
sense, okay, I'm not saying that it's like I'm saying it could include the objective attitude, okay. But it need not. I basically think that like all of this could happen. You could modify the range of your reactive stance, in other words. And so like, okay, but Adam's point was like, okay, but what about the forward looking part of it? I still don't think that like if you're talking about the objective attitude as understood like from Strawson as involving those two parts, right? There's the part where people don't deserve praise or blame. And then there's the part where they are objectified. They're reduced to like something to be managed, handled, trained, cured, right? It certainly involves the first part, the not deserving of, in this case, like out, like, you know, blame, like through the expression, whatever. But it doesn't necessarily involve that second part of the reducing someone to be managed, because I think, like, imagine, like, I don't remember what chapter Nussbaum talks about this, but like, remember she kind of talks about like, well, we're all human. We're probably going to experience like anger in general still, even if you fully buy my argument. Yeah. So there's like the flash. Remember, there's like the flash of real full-blooded anger. But then the, if you can like get yourself kind of accustomed to it, there's that like automatic mechanism of the transition kicks in.
Right.
And then once you're in the transition state, it seems like you could be very naturally and non-calculatedly reactive with people. Just you've kind of like closed off a certain window of things. Do you know what I mean? But that doesn't require that you would like objectify the other person. It just means that you've pre-committed to like shutting off this range of unhelpful reactions. Because you could still,
I see what you're saying. I think we should definitely revisit this at some point.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The last of this series, but this is actually quite interesting.
The last thing I'll say on this is because okay, but like so, Adam, your own suggestion seems to be like a good like anecdote or antidote to the worry, where because you can imagine like okay, we don't see anything wrong with like expressing grief, right? And that could look actually naturally a lot like anger, but it wouldn't be anger. And if you're just pre-committed to like buying Nussbaum's argument, okay, I'm not going to do traditional anger, you could still very like you could condition yourself, I would imagine, to like very reactively express grief towards the person. And if it's done on that reactive basis, you wouldn't be sort of like collapsing that person into an object to be managed.
Oh, certainly other emotions like grief
would still
be a very reactive attitude. I definitely agree on that point, and that like, you know, one could be experiencing several different emotions and then like still very reactive in nature. I'd have to think more about transition anger is could still be reactive in nature. I'd have to think about that.
I don't know. Maybe I'd have to modify the claim. Maybe transition anger can't be reactive. Maybe it could. I just have to think about it more. But if it's not, I still think it wouldn't entail the adoption of the objective stance insofar as other reactive attitudes would be allowed to.
Agreed. Okay. Yeah. We're on the same
page. Fair.
I think we're on the same page.
Okay. I'd have to think more about like, I don't know. I'd have to think more about whether the transition anger itself actually, but a smaller point then.
Yeah. No, that's actually quite interesting to bring up. I think we should honestly like do a follow up to this at some point. It doesn't need to be like, you know, until the end of like this book, but that'd be quite interesting follow-up, you know, Strawson from a new perspective.
This episode of Plato's Cave is supported by my friends at New Lane University. Newlane University is an online university that offers an Associate of Arts and Bachelor's degree in philosophy at a truly affordable price. The program is self-paced, flexible, and competency-based, allowing you to fit it into your schedule. I've had several listeners reach out to me over the years and ask about more formal philosophy training that doesn't require moving across the country or physically going back to school. If you're someone who is interested in philosophy beyond the self-taught method, Newlane University may be the perfect accessible, low-cost entryway into academic philosophy. You can earn your degree at Newlane wholly online and fully at your own pace. And because Newlane University is accredited by the Distance Education Accrediting Commission, your degree will count in all the ways that professionally matter. Newlane's learning model is different than typical undergraduate teaching. You're able to learn at your own pace, and at the end of each course, you're evaluated through a standardized interview with a course evaluator to see how deeply you've absorbed the material, not measuring your ability to merely regurgitate information like typical exams do. It's an education model built for the student, not an antiquated education system. If you're a longtime listener of Plato's Cave, I recommend researching more about Newlane University. You can do so at newlane.edu. That's newlane.edu. I'll provide links to their philosophy program in the description of this episode. Thank you to Newlane University for supporting this episode of Plato's Cave.
Another new perspective.
I would love to. Yeah, we should redo Strawson at some point.
It came up again, though, like with or the two, like, I guess grief and guilt again at the end. It's like self-directed anger.
Yeah, that's right.
It reminded me of the one conversation we had when we were talking about, like, imagining Giffen, like, slept his father's, like, you know, like funeral.
His father's funeral.
Yeah. Playing video games until, you know, 3 a.m. and then you sleep through it.
Mm.
And I found that to be, I guess, just a really interesting point for me there, because I'm like, okay, guilt, I guess I'm kind of just thinking out loud here, but
yeah.
Does guilt necessarily fall within kind of this sphere of anger at large?
That was my exact thought when reading it. I didn't associate guilt with either the... Because, okay, so she talks about, like, remember, anger has to have these, like, two different... It's like you fall into one of two traps on Nussbaum's account. It's either the road to payback or the concern about relative status.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Okay, so let's... I don't know that I never associated guilt with anger.
I read the same exact note. I think it's, like, on page 130.
That's right, yeah.
I don't know if she introduced... Did she talk about guilt maybe in like chapter 3 or whatever, like the one we skipped? That was on forgiveness, but I'm not sure if that was actually like involving guilt.
I mean, I can skim. We haven't read. We're circling back around to that later.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, because like whenever she like brought it up, I was kind of like taken aback. I'm like, do I actually think of guilt as just like self-directed anger? And I was like, no, I don't think I do.
No, I know.
Let me read part of 130 here.
This is where I have
to shout her argument a little more here. But so she says, guilt involves inflicting pain on oneself with the idea that this pain is owed. Pain, indeed, is one constituent of the emotion. This pain expresses, quote, hostility to oneself, unquote. But that suffering is intrinsic to the idea of a world in which we all need to learn moral rules in order to live together in a community. The wrongdoer isolates himself from the community by violating its rules. Fortunately, wrongdoing takes place in a world in which there is a well-understood path to reestablishing the torn fabric of community. Quote, asking for and receiving forgiveness, making sacrifices, reparation, and punishment have the significance of a rite of passage back to union. So, guilt involves inflicting pain on oneself. I think I buy that.
I do buy
a
that
in loose sense of thing.
Yeah.
Here's the best, like the most charitable way I can conceptualize that. I could imagine her arguing that, like, okay, guilt involves like this inability to like let go, to like almost like forgive yourself. So the fact that you like are are like inhabiting that unpleasurable mental space is what the, sort of like the pain is owed portion of that, I guess.
Yes, that's what if that's how you can kind of like frame it, then I agree.
The weird thing though is that guilt for me is not animated on that basis though. I never feel like it's me. I never feel like it's me directing the payment at or payback at myself. The feeling of it is always like from this external perspective of like things weighing on me. Like I can't let something go, but it's because of the force. It's like it's the force of that thing. It's not the force of like me. I'm explaining in some, that really poorly, but
yeah, like, no, I actually
I get what you're going for, yeah.
But I think it's like part of it is you have to kind of like accept just like intrinsically and almost intuitively at some point, or bring it into your intuitions that like you have control over what you feel in some way. So like choosing not to move on, or choosing not to like forgive or put down whatever like involves like the kind of emotional shift would be considered like your action of the pain infliction or something like that. Like that's the only way I can really like pull that together.
Yeah.
I think you also touched on it with the idea of forgiveness. Cause like with guilt, if you feel guilt, like you haven't forgiven yourself, which I think is true. Yeah. So like if you haven't forgiven yourself, like there probably is, I mean, you can blame yourself. I wonder necessarily does blame though entail anger? I mean,
that depends on the account of blame that you adopt. And I think this is just a quick aside, like largely, I think that question's vacuous. Like, I don't think that there's like what really is blame. Like there's not a metaphysical answer to that question, at least, but like because there are like, I didn't realize this, but there are apparently like many, many accounts of what blame is. I'm drawn to R.J. Wallace from Berkeley coined this reactive account, which is drawing on Strawson's reactive attitude. So to feel blame has to involve there's this like cognitive portion of it, which is like the belief that someone has done wrong. And there's also the reactive emotional component of it, which is that you feel resentment, anger, indignation, something, right?
Yeah.
I'm drawn to that account. There are other people. Yeah, I think it's good. There are other people, though, who think that merely evaluative accounts are a good characterization of blame. So the mere negative evaluation of someone would count as an instance of blame. I don't buy that, because to me, that collapses a distinction between negatively evaluating someone and blaming them. Like blaming them seems to be like a more like full bodied thing.
But
that there's also like accounts where it's the proneness or the actuality of like modifying a relationship with that person. There's apparently a view that like to forgive someone is to forswear blame. Like it's to like, you know what I mean? Just give up on your current blame or like the future blame that you could like reanimate towards someone.
I think by your definition, then, like to blame oneself, you would have some sort of reactive attitude that would fall within the anger sphere. Like whether you want to call that resentment or. Yeah. You know, whatever word you
sure,
like.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, like, I think I do buy that then, you know.
Yeah, that guilt would be full-bodied anger towards yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I actually buy this then, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely plausible. I'm trying to find the word for, because there is a distinct emotion, though, that I have felt where... Well, maybe it's not. I don't know. Okay, so like how we've been talking about it then, guilt seems like it has this like, okay, you're feeling things towards yourself, but then there's this like other element of like there's according to like what we've been talking about, there should be this real sense of you can simply just like let go of guilt or not. And I've certainly felt, and that seems to be very self-centered, like I can let go of this feeling or not. But I've had experiences that I would have called guilt, where I feel horrible over something that I've done. And it's just the wrong is still too, the wrong is still just like too present or whatever for it to get to that stage where it's like up to me to let it go. Like, do you know what I'm talking about? Like,
is it, you talking about like the looking forward element of it? Like, you don't want to let go of that?
No,
or it's like the self-inflicted emotional torment or whatever you don't want to let go of?
No, neither. It's like letting go isn't even a thing yet. Like, it's not even in the, like, it's not even involved in the emotion yet. I'm still feeling, it's just like a raw feeling of like, just like, fuck, like I'm just so regretful that I did that thing and like hurt this person or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe it's not a difference in kind. I don't know.
I hate to bring this up again, so we can kind of glance over what I'm saying, but I will just throw this out there that it does, to replace like guilt with just pure grief, seems to almost take a more objective attitude of
one's it's definitely a denial of responsibility in a way.
Yeah, in a way that I understand, like, the more positive effects that could come out of it, both for oneself and others. Yet there is that weird dissociation between, you know, one's behavior and what one feels about one's behavior, where the two aren't as deeply connected when you replace guilt with grief. And so, like, I guess that one's like a little more of a hold up for me, where it's just you view your own behavior like in a,
how unfortunate that I did this thing.
Just a more removed kind of like perspective. And I'm not sure. I think that does radically change how we live and how we kind of like operate as conscious beings. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to think more about that one.
I don't know. I'd have to think more about it too, because there is a sense in which.
You go ahead.
Oh no, I was just thinking. No. Okay, I was just trying to like. Okay, imagine the person who, whenever they do something wrong, successfully adopts the project of transition grief. Their immediate reaction when they've deeply wronged someone is, "How outrageous! There's like, what can be done about this?" And it's like, well. Okay, maybe Nussbaum would argue that, like, well, what are you really actually hoping for? If the person genuinely feels bad, and that feeling bad manifests in a deep desire to like right the situation, Nussbaum is going to ask, like, well, what more do you want? Like, you're just like, you want that person to be just like a masochist, then?
Yeah, it's like, I think if you imagine like them, they have the flash, they have like immediate transition, and they're still like outraged there. But it is like forward looking already, right?
Yeah, because it seems like even on Nussbaum's account, like transition guilt would still involve negative emotions, right? It would just be this is where it gets tricky, because like when you do something really wrong, I'm just going to take it as a cornerstone that like you should feel negative emotions. Like any of you that doesn't have you feel some negative emotion when you've just betrayed a close friend is like, that's not applause. Yeah, curious. That, I'll be honest, that to me is just not really a live option. So the problem for Nussbaum with transition guilt then would be, on what basis could you be feeling? Wouldn't Nussbaum have to be committed to saying any negative emotions associated around like your own wrongdoing would be either irrational because they don't remedy the situation, or falsely believing in this like wish of payback? So isn't she committed to saying like negative? I don't know. Maybe I'm
all negative might be a bit excessive.
But like, okay, on Nussbaum's account, on what basis should you feel negative emotions then? If you've already committed to like righting the wrong,
Well, I think grief would still be appropriate. No.
Okay, grief that like but
the acknowledgement of suffering, kind of.
Okay, okay, and yeah, okay, okay.
It's
okay.
A negative emotion, I'd say.
Because it's almost like the two are very similar, but like grief's almost like I'm deeply pained that I did what I did, and then like almost like guilt's like I'm deeply pained that I did what I did, and I should suffer. Like as some,
yeah. And I shouldn't let this go. Account.
Yeah. Yeah, that I like in some way, like I feel like I deserve to suffer.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, okay,
the continuing of the negative emotion is at least part of a suffering that's continuing that you're inflicting on yourself, mm-hmm. right?
And it's kind of weird to like remove that element still, though, where it's like, I mean, if you do something heinous enough, like, I mean, there is that element, like, make sure I'm phrasing this correctly, but I'm just wondering, like, should one not to some degree think they deserve to suffer for what they've done? If it's heinous enough, I mean, like
at that point you might be able to recognize, like, I need to be forward thinking and like from like a more objective like stance, like maybe I do deserve like some suffering.
Yeah.
Upon reflection, actually, I need to go back. not a reactive way, but just in a very like thought out rational way. It's like I think I need to have like my hands like stapled to a, you know, a crucifix.
Yeah, it's just instrumental, if nothing else. Just like just
for the good of mankind.
In order so that I don't do this again, you know, and that I have a better understanding of that individuals go through, maybe I should, you know, bear my own cross for a week. So I don't know.
I'm curious what you would say about that kind of thing, because if we're talking about truly heinous crimes, there might be some cases like that where it's like you've removed the kind of like instinctual like someone must pay, and then it's like an appropriate suffering. Almost, you know.
I wonder if she would just be like, yeah, that's all grist for my mill, like that's the forward thinking, what can be done about this.
If that's okay, then like I guess that's I don't something.
Know I'm
yeah
just,
no I mean I, that's, I think that's very possible.
The quick aside, this sounds like it would be of deep interest to both of us, or both of you and me as well. Both of us. speaking
both of us and the object in this group.
Speaking directly to Giffen here. Both Giffen, you and I would deeply enjoy this. And the dog could join too.
I just log out.
Sam's from last semester, remember, his office door was open, we were chatting or whatever, and and he told me, he was like, we were just talking about whatever, and it came up, he's like, yeah, I just finished, I've been thinking about this like paper for a long time, and I finally stayed up until like 4 a.m. and just like ground it out.
Yeah.
And he's like, and it's all about guilt. And I draw from like biblical examples, and I talk about like examples from Shakespeare and stuff. And I was like, oh shit, that sounds really, really cool. And he's like, yeah, I want to like deeply characterize what's going on with guilt, because I'm unsatisfied with the literature, and I want to explore like the normative implications of it. And he was he said, I'll send it to you. And I was like, yeah, dude.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Sounds really
that's
good.
Perfect. Yeah. Honestly, so I know you said you're going to circle around to chapter 2, but that kind of like is like a genealogy of forgiveness, which just sounds like it would be kind of like and somewhat analogous to what's going on with like the guilt. Yeah.
I haven't read it, but it was my understanding that it's more than just a genealogy.
It definitely is. There's an account component in there. I only read like the first half of it on accident.
Oh yeah,
but like that element of it, I actually like, find kind of interesting, like where like the practices originate and how they were like warped by different cultures over time, practices in like ancient Judaism and then or pre-Judaism and then Judaism, Christianity, and then up through like examples in like, you know, Middle Ages, English, things like that. So like if that's what he's trying to character, like just characterize guilt over time, that sounds incredibly interesting.
I think and it's still, I mean, he said he sent it off to some a journal for
journals,
review.
Yeah,
but I mean there's no reason why we couldn't talk about it.
No, I'm interested in it.
It sounds really good. We also need to circle back around at some point too. You guys expressed interest in his theory about resentment. Remember this, the ecological theory of resentment, where we're responding to the imbalance in strength created by a wrongdoing. And that there was the idea there that the payback in Nussbaum's terminology would actually, excuse me, be appropriate there, which would be an interesting contrast to what we've read, and seem to buy. I wanted to float the potential idea by you guys, see what you thought about it. Okay, this is essentially. this is essentially a pro Nussbaum argument, because I do, like I said, I'm like a 9 on the scale of convinced by her. Here's one of the best, and we're going to read, I think we're going to read a lot of these, but maybe not a lot, but at least like a couple of papers that touch on this, a communicative value of anger, that there is either intrinsically or instrumentally something that anger does exclusively or does best that like other things can't do in communication.
Yes.
I was kind of thinking about this. And like, this is super, super rough, but here's the idea. One could grant that anger is instrumental in communication, right? It's like trying to get someone to acknowledge the wrong. It's standing up for yourself. It's like showing dignity, right? Here's the idea. Anger like would have these like true anger done in communication. The idea would be like, if people are saying like, okay, this is like worth something, anger has an aim, right? Like they're justifying it in this instrumental value, right? Anger is like supposed to accomplish something. And one of the most prominent things is that like anger has to be done to get like a true recognition of the wrong, to have like the other person like have an emotional uptake from it and like really realize it, right? Okay. Well, here's the problem. Basically, if that's true, that anger should have like this result, then it should be the case that when you allow yourself to like fully express anger and you accomplish that, then anger should subside if it's rational to feel, right? Because it's accomplished the aim. And this is where I'm curious if you guys agree. Like, in my experience, that's not how it works. The other person, you know, you're talking to like the person who wronged you, and you are truly angry and you're truly expressing that anger. And there will often be points, this has happened in the past, I'm sure it's happened with you guys, where like the person, as fully as is possible, acknowledges like the wrong. They're deeply sorry, and it, like all of anger's aims have been accomplished, like on this instrumental view of like the communicative value of anger. Yet, I don't know about you guys, but like I've remained angry, like because and you continue like and but you really shouldn't have done it. Like yeah, I know, like you know what I mean. Like so if it doesn't go away when the goal is satisfied, that seems like it's grist for Nussbaum's mill, that anger is this like irrational emotion that is not responsive to reasons or judgments. Basically the idea would be that either anger, if you can turn anger off when its goal has been accomplished, then it begins to look more like transition anger. It's like outrage and what can be done about it.
Yeah.
And if it's so close to that, maybe it's either that or it's really, really close to it. Well, then why not just go for the transition anger at that point? Because it has so many clear upsides. But if I'm right that anger doesn't go away even when its goal is satisfied, well then okay, so then the other, like the thing that might explain it is that you're motivated by payback And the way that you're like going after that payback is like you're yelling at someone or whatever, right? Like that sucks to be yelled at. And everyone knows that. And that's why you tend to yell at someone. So on that front, it would be irrational because the person has already acknowledged like the wrong that's been done. And I was thinking that like, okay, well, what I'm trying to like, you know, there's got to be some like evidence for this idea, right? So I'm curious if you guys agree with this, but have you ever had, you know, you've been wronged by someone, you're angry, you're expressing the anger, and that person, like a saint, immediately recognizes what they did was wrong and they're deeply sorry for it and they apologize on the spot. The anger doesn't go away though, which is completely irrational. And in fact, sometimes if the recognition comes too quickly, that can actually make you more angry.
This might have a status element to it where like you fell down and then they're just kind of like, you know, flexing in front of you.
Their sainthood is showing. So it makes you even more angry, which is completely irrational.
On the status side, it actually might be a little bit irrational because like they're basically increasing the difference there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not only
it's true. I agree with you.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Again, I'm not saying it's morally like the most sound kind of reasoning, but there is a logic to it.
Yes, which
is a kind of logic.
Yes. Which if that's the retort, then I would have to chase them down the, okay, well, why do you actually care about relative status? Isn't this this like petty thing to think about?
Yeah.
So that would be one branch of it. But if it's not, then okay. So either it's that, or it would be, you have this like implicit desire for payback. And the indication that like when the person immediately recognizes it, you still keep going is you don't think that they've gotten their due yet, so you keep going, right?
Or you almost feel like they haven't fully acknowledged it, in a sense. You know what I mean? Because
that's
like
true.
I feel those, like they're like legit. because acknowledging like is kind of a vague term in this sense that we're talking about it. Because like
sincere, somebody, deep, yeah,
exactly. Somebody can recognize what they did was wrong and they can apologize for it. Yeah. But it's like, no, like this really made me fucking mad. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes.
It wasn't like this was something you should not do again.
You know, no, it's there are definitely times where someone gives like a passing kind of forgiveness, but then like there it might be appropriate to be like I don't think you're like actually matching, like you're not understanding the magnitude. But there are also times where it's like they actually do, and then you're just angry.
It's true. It's true. Completely
you're still angry.
there are definitely those cases in which there's like this. There's a suspicion that they actually haven't had the uptake you want them to. And so the anger then on this like communicative view could still be justified because there's still actually work to do. But there also seems to me like there are just cases where like, no, it sucks, but like the person actually gets it. Like
it's all too easy to think of a situation where you're like, maybe they actually aren't like fully aware of like
you can
do like, that forever.
The mental gymnastics are, you know, whatever you have to do to justify like remaining angry. But you know, honestly, it's probably actually true that like there are instances where the person actually just gets it and has the emotional uptake that you immediately
acknowledgement like, of like a deep flaw in like what they've done.
Exactly. And so okay, so
For me, I've never experienced that when there was like a real demonstration of remorse or like, you know, I guess grief on their part or guilt or whatever, or some sort of indication that matched my indignation. You know what I mean?
Even like, when it came immediately?
No, I've never had that. I've never like
never met a saint.
Okay.
if I was that mad, like I've never had somebody be like just like deeply like suddenly grieving of like their behavior. It'll typically kind of be like, oh no, I understand what you're saying. And you're like, you don't. Like I that response alone like indicates that you don't. You know what I mean? So
they're just like true to that.
So I think of like some examples in my life. What you're saying sounds super interesting. I'm just trying to think here. Like, have I ever been presented with someone that clearly matched the expected emotion? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whether grief or remorse or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I'm
yeah.
not.
Because well, imagine okay. you, is that just like a huge magnitude already?
They'd have to weep.
They're just like on the ground, like prostrating themselves in front of Adam. They're like, appropriate.
They're groveling, asking, groveling at my feet. Just like,
and they're handing like, you the broadsword to behead them.
You think this is a joke? I'll swear.
Yeah. Well, okay, like help me think through this then for a second, because okay, so the thought would be like, so think of an instance where you're super, super angry and the person just like immediately has all of the recognition and emotional uptake you want. There's two options then. Either anger subsides, or it doesn't. If it doesn't, then it really is irrational, because it's either relying, because the fact that it remains means that it's relying on one of two things, the concern about relative status, like Giffen pointed out, or the concern of payback. And either of those we all think are irrational, yeah. Just buying Nussbaum's argument. Okay, so then what about the other branch of that dilemma, where the anger does actually immediately subside? To me, how far away is that from transition anger? I mean, because if it actually subsides, that means it couldn't be based on payback, because the person hasn't suffered, because you know what I'm saying? Like, you're not angry anymore. So the person isn't continuing to suffer, and it can't be concerned about relative status, because if you were, you'd be angry. So if the anger subsides, it can't be based on any of the two constitutive aims of like traditional anger. Therefore, wouldn't Nussbaum just say, yeah, that's more like fodder for what I'm arguing, that this was like an instance of rational transition anger. You were angry. You said like, this is outrageous. That the outrageous part was you saying to the other person, this is outrageous. Like what you've done, this is unacceptable. And the fact that the person recognizes it is like satisfying the forward-looking condition. So if you don't remain angry, then it was transition anger, or at least like something really, really close to it.
It's tough kind of what you're going for though, like, because like if you're expressing your anger, like the goal of them having like with the goal of them demonstrating some sort of guilt or remorse, I think that would fall within the desire for the other person to suffer to some extent, because like you want them to feel like what they've done to you. You know what I mean?
But there's two ways for that to happen though. Like, you could think that this like a slight suffering, like a feeling bad and recognizing it, is what's required for the recognition to like land, but that wouldn't necessitate the desire for payback if it was just like, hey, I want to be like deeply recognized as being wronged here because this is unacceptable, like in the relationship, you know?
It just all depends, like,
because
the thing is, like, I think it would depend like why the anger subsided, right? Because like subsided because you felt the person was like feeling the right reactive attitudes. You know what I mean? Like, of just like sudden guilt and just
like remorse. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, of course. Like, at that point, I think that if it subsides because they felt those emotions, then I still think it lands within the category of, you know, wanting the other person to suffer, because those are negative emotions and you want them to experience them.
Isn't it more complicated than that though? Because, so if it subsides because they felt that, but their feeling that was just an indication to you that like they get it, couldn't that still be transition anger? Because
no,
because
we're talking about two different categories. I'm saying if that's the reason it subsides,
yeah. If that's
the other one could just be, it just subsides because you're convinced they acknowledge what they did. You know what I mean? You could be convinced, like it could just subside, the anger, because you recognize that they acknowledge what they did.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's much closer to transition anger. But if it subsides,
because
they're experiencing, you know, negative emotions because of what they did,
I
would still fall squarely within kind of like a more like a desire for the other to feel some sort of
they have now gotten their due.
Wait.
I'm just thinking though, doesn't that actually just hinge on your account of like what it takes to fully acknowledge something though? Like right? Because if you think that like an acknowledgement, like if like, because okay, like I was assuming that like a full acknowledgement would both be like a cognitive like an assessment from the other person of like I did something wrong, but I mean, the way that we tend to think about things is like, and we were talking about this with guilt, is like, you want the other person to feel negative emotions, which don't themselves count as like, those wouldn't count as like payback if they're part of the acknowledgement, right? Like, if you want them to feel negative emotions above and beyond that, then it would count as payback. But just wanting them to feel negative emotions doesn't seem to me to like necessitate the desire for payback.
I think it depends, right? I mean, like we could imagine two scenarios, right? Mm-hmm. Like I wrong you in some way and then like get very angry. And then I, on one hand, I respond back and I give you like a detailed response of like, of understanding of what I did and was wrong. But I'm not really like showing any, you know, negative emotions, and possibly I'm not feeling any negative emotions. On one hand, you could like kind of observe that and say like, and think, okay, he recognizes, he acknowledges what he did hurt me and he understands his behavior was wrong. Like another scenario where I deeply wrong you and then like, you know, you're yelling at me and I just like break down in tears because of like, you know, it just, I'm like emotionally very in tune with the, you know, behavior. And it was like my own wickedness just overcomes. and like, then suddenly like that stymies the emotion of anger where it's like, okay, I'm convinced, you know, that this person acknowledges it and they are suffering to an extent. So I kind of, it kind of depends on like why the anger subsides.
I see. So you're, so it's an actually, it's actually like a subjective claim about why that person's anger dissipates. Was it because the weeping was an indication that the person like really acknowledged it? In which case, no, it's not a desire for payback. Or did the anger go away when the person was weeping because it was a satisfaction of like, well, this person has suffered too.
Yes, exactly.
I see what you're saying. So, actually it's, we're down like a couple branches at this point, which is why I'm like, you know, buffering a little bit.
I'm buffering a bit.
Like, so around 11 PM around this time.
Yeah, no, that seems right to me. The other thing that I was thinking, we're going back up to the main branch at this point. So either anger, and like I said, this is like really inchoate still, like this idea. So either like the anger goes away, in which case it seems like it could be, it depends, right? This is your point, Adam. Like, if the anger goes away, it depends why it goes away. but let's say that it goes away because it was an acknowledgement of the wrong or whatever, in which case, okay, that's either transition anger or really close to it.
I completely agree.
And then the other branch is, let's say it doesn't go away. Well, there's two branches to that. It's either you're concerned about relative status, which seems wrong, or you're concerned about payback, which seems irrational. Okay. There could be a third branch, though. Anger could still remain. This was, and this was, honestly, I read this and I was like, oh my God. I've very rarely had, I mean, these instances come and they're like the treat of like doing philosophy, but they don't come that often anymore just because like, you know, we're familiar with like a lot of this stuff. But this one, Okay, I read this and I was like, oh my God, is that right? So there's a third possibility, I think, that anger could remain. But this reason too would be irrational. But it's something that Nussbaum doesn't sort of like fully incorporate into her view, which I think she could. So let me find it. It is, I remember it came up under the section of, it came up sort of incidentally under the section of children's anger at their parents, but it actually doesn't necessarily have anything to do with that relationship dynamic. Okay, so this is 108. Well, actually, I think the pithier part is on 109. So Nussbaum is talking about this person with a last name of Lerner. I can't find her first name, but Harriet Lerner, in a book called The Dance of Anger. Okay, this was like, when I read this, I was like, oh my God, I have done this like many, many times. Okay, so I'm quoting from 109, first full paragraph. Lerner makes two excellent points in this fascinating chapter. First, she shows that anger is often a way of not solving the real problem, of cycling it round and round. It's skipping that, like, whatever. It's like a game with repeat play. And in this case, each repetition makes things worse for both. And then at the beginning of the next paragraph, she says, second, Lerner emphasizes that anger is easy and reasoning about the future is hard because repeating a problem is easier than solving it. It is very challenging when two people are close to renegotiate a relationship that will include both genuine separateness and real love and intimacy. This is in the context of a parent and relationship, but it could be generalized to whatever. She continues, change is scary, whereas going through the familiar routine, even if painful, is less scary. And I read this and I was like, oh, I was like, that is so fucking true.
It's so true. Yeah.
So basically the idea is that the third tree of the dilemma would be, okay, anger may not go away in these communicative instances, but as a way of like false productivity or something, it's like anger is like, it's actually an expression of weakness on the person's part to not be sort of emotionally and mentally ready to do the work of the forward looking, like, how do we solve this? Yeah. And so anger is like a stalling technique or something like that, because you're afraid of, or not, maybe not afraid, but like either afraid or like you don't have the energy yet, or like you're just like, you don't have the mental fortitude to figure out the harder part, which is like, how do we fix the solution?
Yeah. It's always there. It's easily accessible. It's always in your pocket.
Yes, yes. It's so, you could just reach in and grab a big handful of anger. Yes. And I was like, I read that and I was like, holy shit. Like, that's actually so fucking true. And it's so opaque in the moment. Like, it is so opaque in the moment. But of course, like, so the idea of like in the paper would just be to talk about like, okay, well, look, if you're so okay, like there's two branches of this dilemma, right? Either you are capable of moving forward and you don't, in which case this is clearly irrational because both people are just continuing to suffer. It's unpleasant to be angry and it's unpleasant to receive anger. So if you are truly ready to move on, then just do it. And if you're not ready to like have the conversation about like, how do we fix things, then just say that. Like, say, I don't have like the mental space right now to like figure out how to solve this. So we're just going to talk tomorrow or something. Like, don't like the continuing to express anger just digs the hole deeper and makes like the eventual repair, if it happens, harder to actually like be successfully done.
So you need to get outside the dance of anger.
Yeah,
from the bottom of that page.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, I don't know why, but I read that and I was like, Jesus Christ, that's like one of the truest things I've ever read.
I think it's very easy to see a dance of anger, you know, mm-hmm. from, you know, us engaging in it or other people that have been in it, just spiraling.
I was like amazed at like all of that happens in like two pages, and to me, like that like there was just so much more that Nussbaum like declined to discuss about that. I was like, like that is so fucking true.
That might be actually one of the earliest branching points too, if you were to create sort of like hierarchy of like bifurcation. Like the first kind of branching point might be like, you know, like why, you know, does this expression of anger, you know, as an instrument here, why does this not kind of evaporate once the acknowledges? And it's just like, it's like the first question one asks, what it must ask is like, you know, like, is this person kind of trapped in cyclical anger?
Yeah.
Like, and if the answer is yes, then like, that's kind of just the, and if it's no, then it kind of enters like the other branching.
Yeah. That was exactly how I was like viewing it. Yeah. Under the first, well, I think the first branch is, does the anger go away when the communicative goals are solved?
Oh,
if
true,
no,
that'd be the first thing.
But immediately in the no is what you were saying.
Yeah, without a doubt.
But like, I don't like. Does you were both nodding, but like, does that seem right to you? Like what Lerner was talking about?
Oh, 100% right.
That's like 1,000% right to me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like I said, that I want to talk to like the professor about it and see if there's like something there. But
it sounds like a very good paper. A very good paper.
I think if it stands a chance of being good, it's because I've been like Sisyphus on that route like so many times. Like I've rolled that without, dude. The craziest thing is to me like how opaque that was in the moment, and how looking back it is like so clear to me now that that's what I was doing.
When reading,
anger's easy.
Like reading this section, I'm like I like reconceptualized like my relationship like with my own parents, and I'm like, okay, this is like a positive chapter in that sense of like how I could like move forward, like in certain, I mean, like generally positive relationship, but like in certain areas, like instead of like this continual cycle we go through, like
yes.
How could this, you know, be resolved positively?
Yeah.
It's like, well, first thing I need to do is, you know, kind of
actually ask that question.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So,
yeah.
Yeah. No, it's true. It was actually very therapeutic to read that section from Lerner.
Yeah.
Because like, I don't know about, I'm sure you guys, like maybe especially Adam, because as we like said in the intro, like Adam and I are like a little bit more prone to anger than it seems like you are, Giffen, but like
a bit.
I like Adam, I'm sure that you have done this dance 1,000 times if it's happened once, because this is true for me. We're like,
100%.
Okay, there's a wrong that's happened, and like you know, just your anger ignites, and all of the energy you only realize later, like later, meaning like upon reading this, was like all of the energy there was spent on like the deflation of anger. But by the time that like all of that's done, you never have the conversation of like how to actually fix things moving forward, because like all of the energy was spent on like the anger and like the defensiveness from the other person. Maybe you finally get like an acknowledgement, and then you're just like, you know what I mean? You're just like, oh, and then you just like leave at that point, and nothing ever just, gets, yes.
Yeah. Well traveled neural pathways.
Yes. 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 deep grooves in the snow.
Yeah. It's true though. It's true.
It isn't just picking another path. It's climbing out of the one you're falling down.
It's so true. It's so true. Yeah. Dude. I read that. I was like, God damn, is that true?
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah. All right.
How about we find peace at this point at 10:52 Eastern?
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I have some stuff to do after this.
Yeah, me too.
I was doing so well until like 10:48, and then I just
I think we all hit a wall. But we'll talk off air about what we're gonna do next, because we're slightly out of order. But yeah, I liked this chapter a lot, actually. I think I liked it even more after talking about it than I did going into it.
One of the more fruitful readings I've ever done.
Oh my God.
Me too. Honestly.
Yes.
Like, I'm telling you, like, after reading chapters one and two, I was like, yeah, I don't like to acknowledge what I'm reading right now, because like, anger does play a role in my life. And then I read chapter four, and I'm like, yeah. like a Nussbaum, like acolyte now.
You just slowly ascend it.
It's true. Like, I, you know, I've like, you know, been proselytized to, like, in this.
It's true. No, it actually makes so much sense now. Okay, well, for listeners, hope you're enjoying the series and tune in next time.
If you enjoyed this episode of Plato's Cave, please support the show by researching New Lane University. You can find out more at newlane.edu. Thank you to New Lane University for supporting this episode of Plato's Cave. Thank you.